At the end of last month, Prague hosted an international conference to discuss some of the issues determining the direction of today's Europe. The event was organized by the Václav Havel Library, which aims to keep both the political and literary legacy of the late Czech president alive. Havel saw the European Union as a force for peace and stability, but he was often critical of the EU's priorities. So it is apt that the conference heard a huge range of views on Europe's future, from federalist to deeply sceptical. David Vaughan spoke to one of the Czech Republic's leading academics about some of the issues that were discussed.
Europe was a theme that President Havel returned to again and again. He came from a strongly Europhile family. His maternal grandfather was Hugo Vavrečka, a politician in 1930s Czechoslovakia who dreamed of a united Europe at a time when the idea of a European Union was still a world war away. As president, Václav Havel was strongly supportive of the project of European integration, but he believed that its focus on economic cooperation was too narrow. Here he is speaking back in 2009.
Já se domnívám, že by bylo velikým úspěchem, kdyby
I think it would be a good thing if the various bodies of the European Union could sometimes consider the benefits of shuffling their priorities and putting a greater stress on human rights, the legal state, the legal code, respect for the law, at the expense of the economic parts. Taking into account that what primarily connects Europeans are certain spiritual values, as they have been formed on the European continent over the centuries. The question of Europe's broader values was brought into sharp focus at the Prague conference, amid the backdrop of the unfolding crisis in Ukraine, which left the European Union struggling to find an adequate response. At the same time, the EU continues to seek a way out of the euro crisis, and in Britain, there are growing calls for the UK to leave the EU altogether. Britain also happens to be the adopted home of one of the Czech Republic's most respected academics, Professor Jiří Přibáň, who teaches legal philosophy and European law at Cardiff University in Wales. I spoke to him during a break in the conference and began by asking him about Václav Havel's legacy to the European debate.
I think it's less to do with what he has to say to us and more to do with topics, themes and problems which he raised. And so it's more with questions than with answers. And today I think we can see that the European crisis which we are going through is actually a consequence of failures and shortcomings of the project to which Václav Havel was pointing in 1990s. For instance, the lack of political representativeness of European institutions, not just the democratic deficit, but simply that European institutions have to represent certain interests and policy issues of the European public.
On the other hand, you've just been speaking, and there are a couple of things which I thought were quite at odds with ideas that are associated with President Havel, one of them being that he was not a great fan of political parties, and you were talking very strongly in favour of the politicisation of the European debate. The second thing that you cast some doubt on was the idea of a Europe built primarily on values, which is something very much that we would identify with President Havel. And you suggest that actually there are so many different values in Europe, it's better to deal with the nitty-gritty, practical things.
Yes, indeed. And that's why I called my speech heretical. And in the best spirit of Czech tradition of heretics, I think we have to, and I contrast it, politics of interest to politics of values, and try to show that values can be both unifying and very divisive, very dangerous, and that we know that morality is important, but at the same time, it's a high explosive which can cause deep frictions if you argue from the position of higher moral ground. So my speech was a bit heretical about some of Václav Havel's views. Nevertheless, if I were to highlight and emphasize something from the Havel legacy, it would be politics of dissent. And I believe that today in Europe we need more dissent and less consensus, because consensus has disappeared. So we have to create dissent even to the official Euro-technocratic Ptidepe.
And you caused a little bit of a stir in the audience when you suggested that there should be, you even used the word, provocatively used the word war, there should be more war in Europe in the sense of the battling out of ideas rather than trying to iron out difficulties that are emerging more and more in Europe at the moment. This, again, comes as a surprise when everybody's sort of saying, let's try and calm things down. You're saying, let's try and stir things up.
Yes, exactly, because democracy isn't just a matter of creating consensus. Democracy is a conflict, and I would like to call for much more agonistic, conflict-based and conflict-driven European polity, because, after all, those anti-European extreme populist parties cannot just be endlessly labeled as you're bad Europeans, you're threatening the European project. No, you have to take them on their turf and you have to argue in detail and in political conflict against this particular and very dangerous politics of recreated ethno-nationalism and basically boycotting Europe as such.
You gave a very concrete example of migrant workers who come, for example, to the United Kingdom, and if people actually sit down and work out the mathematics of how much they're contributing and how much they're taking, the result of the equation is very much clear that they're contributing far more than they're taking. This is an example of the kind of nitty-gritty that you're talking about.
Absolutely, and it was my profound appraisal of the quality of British democracy and British public debate that the moment when anti-immigration rhetoric was almost becoming part of everyday political language, then you have opponents coming up with exact figures showing how Polish workers, that mythical figure of a Polish plumber, actually contributes by taxes and by contributing to the overall welfare in Britain, and society in Britain cannot be divided between natives and non-natives, immigrants. Simply, this is a very vibrant society which needs to reconsider and rethink its social solidarity, and something which British politics contributed to Europe, and this is the concept of social citizenship. The concept of social citizenship is absolutely essential, and we need to critically reassess and reformulate the need of social citizenship and social justice in the current state of European crisis.
You're based in Wales. In the United Kingdom, there's also a great deal of debate about national citizenship, and this year there will be the referendum in Scotland. There is a far greater debate in Europe than there was in recent years about national identities, about the possibility of new nation states emerging. This is a very different kind of citizenship, isn't it?
It is, and it's very peculiar at the same time, because Welsh nationalism and Scottish nationalism are two very different forms of modern nationalism, and I managed to upset some of my friends who are Scottish nationalists and with a great knowledge of Central Europe when I compared Alex Salmond to Vladimir Mečiar of 1992 and said, well, he has...
Vladimir Mečiar, of course, was the Slovak Prime Minister after the split of Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. Yes, and Alex Salmond uses a very similar rhetoric, probably with better mouthwash and better tailor than Vladimir Mečiar in 1992. But the argument is still the same. We can take all benefits from the Union and we still can get particular our own national gain from going independent. And of course, it's not a win-win situation. You're going to have to pay for it and you have to be honest about it, like the currency union, like the Euro membership. And it's really striking how Scottish nationalists are playing that victim game, yeah, that everybody bullies us from Brussels, from Westminster. We are better and we know best. I think, and I completely rely on the quality of the British public debate, media and civil society, that all these topics will become ever more discussed. And it's interesting that it's only now when in Britain people realize that actually once upon a time there was a split split of Czechoslovakia in the Velvet Divorce, and now they realize that actually Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore because the current situation in UK looks so similar like the situation in Czechoslovakia before the election of 1992.
In which case, I mean, today, 20 years after the split of Czechoslovakia, more than 20 years after the split of Czechoslovakia, very few people would actually want to go back.
Absolutely, and I think if Scottish nationalists succeed, and it's a perfectly legitimate goal to have an independent country and the right to self-determination, they can succeed and they can have as amicable relationships with their English and Welsh counterparts as Czechs have with Slovaks these days. But I think first thing is you have to be honest about the cost of independence, not just about the benefit of independence.
And just finally, one thing that I think certainly would have worried Václav Havel is this growing tendency in Europe, in several European countries, including the Czech Republic, you also mentioned Italy, for politicians to be elected who are business people, who are offering a kind of business-type model for making the economy, the country, work more efficiently. In the Czech Republic, we have Mr. Babiš, who's just been appointed finance minister of the Czech Republic. We have a new Italian prime minister who's of very much the same ilk. This is something that you have just been warning against, isn't it? This idea of running countries or running Europe as if it was a business.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the worst risks of depoliticization that we believe that business knows best or better than politicians. And actually the mantra of the 1990s, it's economy stupid. I think we should turn it the other way around. It's politics stupid. And one of the paradoxes and paradoxical consequences of not just the European economic crisis, but global economic crisis, is that we believed at the beginning of the crisis that we need more political regulation of markets. 5 years on, or 6 years on, we can see that actually we have more business talk and more intervention of markets in politics than we had before. And this is the first global crisis in which actually the difference between the richest and the poor has grown rather than diminished. And we have the crisis which was caused by markets, and the consequence is that markets became ever more powerful at the cost of democratic politics and political accountability.
I mean, part of the problem that politicians are no longer driven by ideology, therefore political parties are no longer clearly identifiable as representing a certain set of values and ideals.
Yes, exactly, because politicians behave more like managers and less like leaders, and those who behave like leaders actually have democratic politics as its enemy.
Jiří Příbán, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
Thank you very much.